Welcome to the weekly Virginia Athletics Podcast. Another academic year has come and gone at the University of Virginia, and only a few of our teams are still competing. I'm Jeff White from VirginiaSports.com, and my guest today is someone I've been wanting to have on the show for a long time, and that's Randy Bird, our esteemed Director of Sports Nutrition. Randy, I got to admit, I was hoping you might have brought some snacks here with you in the spirit of the interview, but I'm glad to see you anyway, even if you didn't.
How's it going? You didn't give me a heads up to bring some snacks.
I thought you carried food with you everywhere. Before we dive into this topic and what you do here, let me ask you, when you were growing up, were you a kid who always ate his fruits and vegetables, or did you prefer junk food like a lot of us did?
I would say all of the above. I ate fruits and vegetables, but absolutely I was a fan of cookies and brownies and junk food.
When's the last time, fess up, when's the last time you ate at a fast food joint?
Oh, wow. Fast food. I really don't like fast food. So I couldn't tell you the last time I had any real fast food. The closest, I guess you could call it fast food, probably a month ago would be Chick-fil-A.
Okay. A little history of sports nutrition here at UVA. In 2007, Rob Skinner was hired to launch a nutrition program in the athletic department. I believe John Oliver was the driving force behind that. At the time, there were fewer than two dozen universities with full-time sports dietitians. You took over from Rob in 2010, and the landscape in your profession has been changing rapidly since then. How many schools now have someone in your role full-time?
Sure. It has really rapidly expanded. When I was hired, there was probably only 20 schools at the time with at least one person. And now I would say there's closer to 70 schools that have at least one person. But where a lot of the growth has come is once a school, once a university has somebody in place, they realize how much that person can do, and they hire more within that university. So there's, of those 70 schools, at least half of them have at least two or three people.
Why do you think it's been kind of so slow to catch on, or initially was so slow to catch on?
I would say, again, people didn't realize what they didn't have. Mm-hmm. Some of it caught on more of keeping up with the Joneses. That if, example would be, if, and this is one I know of, when Auburn hired their dietitian, Alabama immediately hired one.
How did you get interested in nutrition in general and then sports nutrition in particular?
Okay, so I'll start with the sports component first.
Okay.
Always been involved with sports from the time I was 4 years old playing t-ball,
right,
through high school, through American Legion baseball. I always knew I wanted to do something in sports. And when I went to school, my original plan was to be an orthopedic surgeon, mm-hmm, since they seem to have the most sports-related, from a physician standpoint, they seem to have more involvement with sports. So that was my plan going, right, into school. And then in school, meeting with a pre-med advisor, was a bio major pre-med. He recommended that I have a degree, a bachelor's degree in something that I really enjoyed to fall back on if I changed my mind, didn't get into med school, whatever the case may be. And biology definitely was not it.
Mm-hmm.
So as I searched around, I found a program, Human Nutrition, Foods, and Exercise, and loved it. Got into that. And then after meeting with some orthopedic surgeons, figured out quickly that I probably didn't want to do that and found sports nutrition. Thought I might get into strength and conditioning first. Mm-hmm. Because universities didn't have this position when I was going through school. So my plan originally was to get my degree, become a strength coach, and then kind of start a nutrition program from within once hired as a strength coach.
Is yours a kind of supportive profession where you compare notes with your peers at other schools, or is it kind of competitive with a rivalry? Like, we're not going to give away our trade secrets.
Sure. Great question. And I would say that's one thing that sets our profession apart from others is we are collaborative. One thing I really enjoy is we can sit down and conference that I go to every year, our Collegiate and Professional Sports Dietitians Association, is next week. Mm-hmm. And one big, big piece of that is the ability to sit down and just talk, talk shop. And yeah, we're very, very collaborative. There's, when it comes to nutrition, there's not really a lot of secrets. It's not like a training program that a coach has in place. It's more, we can communicate with each other and problem shoot if there's issues that we have to deal with.
You were at the University of Kansas for 5 years before coming to UVA. This is not nutrition related, but how does the atmosphere for men's basketball at JPJ compare with that at Allen Fieldhouse?
Yes. When I got to Kansas, that was the first time I'd really been in a true basketball environment.
Right.
At Virginia Tech and undergrad, had the football with the Michael Vick years. That was phenomenal, phenomenal environment there. And Kansas basketball topped that. And then when I first got here at JPJ, it didn't compare to KU, but over the last couple years.
Yeah, 2010, it was still,
yes,
still the building process.
And over the last few years, it has rivaled it. I would say it's equal. Which I couldn't have imagined saying when I was at Kansas that something something was going to equal it, and I would say it has caught Kansas, and they're neck and neck.
Good. Virginia has 27 varsity teams now, with the addition of the two squash teams this school year, made up of nearly 700 student athletes. That's a huge number. Tell me about your staff. I know Kelly Rossi is associate director. Brooke Pearson is assistant director. Do you have student interns or additional staff?
Sure. Yeah, the ratio of dietitian to student athlete is not where it needs to be. And I have two interns, two wage employees that just passed their RD exam. So on staff, counting myself, we have five dietitians, but could always use more.
About 4 years ago, the NCAA implemented new legislation that significantly expanded the scope of what you and your staff are allowed to do. Can you fill in listeners on what you were allowed to provide student athletes before 2014-15 and what you can give them now?
Sure.
I mean, it was the famous bagel.
I'll get to that one too. Yeah. Right. First, I'd say there was a little bit of hypocrisy within some of the rules initially. It was always promoted as we're food first, that student athletes should stay away from supplements, that we need to eat food for fuel, which is awesome. But prior to really 2012, all universities could do was provide supplements, post-workout,
right,
protein shakes, and then you could provide one enhanced meal, which is referred to as training table meal, and that was it. Then part of an impetus for change within the ACC, actually, recommendations were made trying to get the NCAA to allow us to provide more food and use the examples of things like fruit, nuts, bagels, because we couldn't even provide fruit prior to that. And so then they took that literally word for word, that, okay, you can provide fruit, nuts, and bagels. Couldn't provide peanut butter, couldn't provide cream cheese, no spreads, nothing on the bagel. It was just fruit, nuts, and bagels.
Right.
And then there was a push for quite some time to be able to provide more food. And a proposal was in place, and then the famous Shabazz Napier's statement after the national championship game really drove the proposal that was already in place to be able to provide more. And it's really unlimited snacks, not unlimited meals and unlimited food, but more snacks to meet the needs of the student athletes with all the demands they're putting on their body. So we do have more of your grab and go snacks available everywhere.
And each team has some kind of station, right?
Correct.
Where after their workout or after practice or whatever, they can go and get shakes, snacks, peanut butter and jelly, Clif bars, nuts, the whole deal.
Yeah, so we've always had in the weight rooms your protein-based shakes, whether that be Muscle Milk or Gatorade shakes or Rock and Refuel. We've always had that. And now in every team's locker room, they have a station that has a refrigerator, which will have chocolate milk and Greek yogurt and fruit. Then there's a area for more of your non-perishable items, like your nuts and trail mix and bars, like you mentioned, Clif mm-hmm. bars, that athletes ideally can use that as they come to their locker room and fuel for whatever activity they're going to do. So they have some food in them to provide energy for the workout. And then if they're having to rush off to class, they have ability to get food to recover from that workout and hold them off as they get through class before they can sit down and actually eat a meal.
When the student athletes who arrive on grounds now, let's say 2018, are they any better educated about nutrition than they were 5 years ago, seven years ago? You wish?
I shouldn't be surprised, but I'm always surprised with the lack of education coming out of high school on nutrition. With the push that we have in this country to address the obesity problem, right. Being able to eat better growing up, there's supposed to be a great educational component as these student athletes right. are going through middle school and high school, and it just either doesn't happen or a lot of them aren't paying attention. So there's a lack of knowledge, surprising lack of knowledge, when most first-year students get here. Not just our student athletes, just the first general on grounds, yes.
Across the street at John Paul Jones Arena, we have an outstanding executive chef in Tim Saul. You work closely with Tim, right?
Yes.
And I think you even have an office over there, right?
Yes.
In the dining hall. For people who don't know, tell us what you're allowed to provide in terms of food at the actual dining hall. That's 5 nights a week. During the season, but no breakfast, no lunch, right?
Correct. We provide one meal 5 nights. So we choose to do dinner. And a lot of that has to do with timing of sports practices and training. They finish, so then they can go, after they shower, go across the street to JPJ and get food that will help them recover from their workouts. And, I mean, we can provide within reason, pretty much anything we want. The issue is obviously always budgetary.
Cost, yeah.
So we always have 3 entree choices for the athletes to choose from, with their carbohydrate side options to help them refuel, and then plenty of fruit and vegetable options, which the way I always teach our athletes is the fruits and vegetables, the more stress they put on their body, the more of those they need to eat. So we have those options available to help them deal with stress. The carbohydrates, like your potatoes and pastas and rice dishes, are the gasoline mm-hmm. to help them refuel from what they just used. And then the protein options, the entrees, help them repair the damage they've done.
Who sets the menu? Do you and Tim work collaboratively on that?
Sure. We do work collaboratively. When I first got here in 2010, Tim and I sat down and went through my philosophy of what I wanted over there. And Tim has done an awesome job of running with that, to where now it's Tim tells me what he wants to do. And so far, really over the last 5-6 years, I haven't had to make any changes. And Tim does an awesome job.
You have control over what the student athletes eat for dinner, at
Correct.
Least on those five nights. And after their workouts, how hard is it for you to help them break, you know, bad habits that they can still indulge in for breakfast, for the rest of the day, when they're not in the dining hall, kind of under your supervision?
As with anybody, breaking bad habits is tough.
Yeah.
So one of my goals is addressing it right when they get here on grounds as a first year. The problem is most of them, I probably can't say most, a lot of them ate poorly in high school and mm-hmm. were very successful. So it worked for them in high school, so they don't see the need to change just yet. Usually it takes a year or two for them to see the increased demands mm-hmm. at UVA, the increased competition that they're facing. And then a lot of times it's really that third year that something clicks, that, okay, I can't do what I was doing in high school. It's not working.
Yeah, I mean, I hear it all the time from upperclassmen here when they at some point they realize I need to sleep more, sleep better, eat better. I mean, it's a common refrain among, you know, football players and basketball. It becomes, you know, if they're going to be successful, they realize that that's something that gives them an edge or that other people are doing around the country.
And what's great is with the athletes that I'm seeing come in that Coach Mendenhall's bringing in, there seems to be more buy-in early with the new football guys that I'm not having to really preach at them until it clicks, that a lot of them want to make changes right away.
As I mentioned, there are close to 700 student athletes at UVA in a given academic year. Does each one have his or her own nutrition plan?
Sure.
Or do you kind of group the distance runners together, the offensive linemen together, the linebackers together? How do you tackle that? Because that's a lot of work.
Correct. No, not every single athlete has their own nutrition plan. And the way we handle it is I've split up the sports between myself, Kelly, and Brooke. Mm-hmm. And each of us give a team presentation to all of the teams, the teams we're responsible for. And then from there, athletes choose to come to us to set up a plan. Mm-hmm. I would say of all the athletes we meet with, 90 to 95% of them are making that decision on their own, not being sent to us by a coach or athletic trainer or doctor. But from there, essentially, if that athlete's not ready to make a change and change how they eat, then there's nothing I can put on paper to give them to follow. They have to really make that decision that, okay, I need to change. I want to follow a nutrition plan. And those are the ones that we write plans for and meet with regularly to help them address that change.
What sport or sports burns the most calories in their workouts here?
Great question. And if you ask anybody outside of UVA, their guess would be football. And I would say that's incorrect. The number one I would rank would be kind of a tie between rowing and men's swimming.
Okay.
That those two burn the most calories. And then you have women swimming and football are right behind that. And then you get into soccers and lacrosse are pretty equal. But rowing and men's swimming would burn the most.
Wrestling is a sport in which, or any sport that has weight classes, nutrition is going to be a big deal. Do you play a role in determining how much weight is safe for wrestler A to cut?
Absolutely.
And where, at what class he should compete?
Absolutely, and that's one great thing here is Coach Garland is really aware of the dangers and potentially harmful side effects of cutting too much weight. And he utilizes us extensively to get weight, do body fat analysis. So then we can analyze, okay, how much of this person's weight is made up of muscle compared to fat? So how much can they safely lose? Which then makes it easy to determine what weight class would be best for that individual.
Who do you interact and work with most closely with each sport? Is it the strength and conditioning coach? Is it the head coach, the athletic trainer, some combination of all three?
Combination of all. It depends on the sport, too. It's a combination, but each sport's slightly different.
You mentioned Bronco, though. He is supportive of what you're trying to do, and I guess if a head coach makes that clear, his players take note.
It makes a tremendous difference. And yes, Bronco is extremely supportive. He wants the team to be the fittest, healthiest team there is, and nutrition is a large component of that. And when a coach like that stresses it, then the players buy in.
These are the final days of University Hall, at least to be inhabited by employees here and student athletes. What will the closing of U-Haul mean for sports and sports nutrition operation?
Well, our office currently is located in Honesty Hall, which is included in this
project,
and all of our storage for the snacks that we provide and the shakes are in University Hall. So we have to be moved out, but also all the locker rooms that there's a lot that are located in U Hall that are being moved out. So as we get moved out, we're going to have a central fueling station as part of our office. So the locker rooms that were serviced in U Hall will have a central spot to come to versus having it where they're changing clothes.
Practice for the fall sports, including football, does not start here until early August, but there will be student athletes training here pretty much all summer, starting mainly in June. The dining hall is not open in the summer, I believe, but what are you allowed to provide the athletes who are here training?
Sure. And that's something from a NCAA legislation standpoint, that training table meal, that enhanced meal, the legislation says we can do it during normal school time, so your fall semester and spring semester, so that food incidental to participation, which are the snacks that we provide, that we can provide when they're here in class training. So all the protein-related products that we have for after workouts, even your, as you mentioned, peanut butter and jelly bars, all of that we can provide during the summer when they're here in class, and even things like grab-and-go sandwiches if they have to rush off to class.
Do you like the fact that you get to work with such a wide range of body types and athletes, males and females? I mean, you're not working with just one sport in which maybe everybody looks pretty much like everybody else. I mean, you've run the gamut from 130-pound cross-country runners to 300-pound offensive linemen.
And that's something when I've talked to other people that I said that's one piece that I really enjoy is you don't see the same thing day in and day out. And working with different sports, you have different demands for that athlete. So you have to have different nutrition strategies for that athlete so it doesn't get boring. That makes it enjoyable.
You don't get much downtime during the year, I know, but is this a slower period for it till people start coming back?
Yes, this is the 3.5-week period that things slow down right around graduation until that second summer session.
Well, good. Well, I don't want to take too much of this downtime. Thanks again for stopping by. I learned a lot. I hope our listeners did too. Bon appetit.
Thank you, Jeff.
This is graduation weekend at the university. Baseball and women's golf are competing out of town, but all is quiet in Charlottesville on the UVA athletics front. For schedules and information on all our teams, visit virginiasports.com. I'll be back soon with another podcast. Until then, thanks for listening and congrats to everybody graduating this weekend.